someday. I met a strange lady, she made me nervous. She took me in and gave me breakfast. And she said, do you come from a land down under? Where women go and men wonder. Can't you hear the thunder?
Take cover, because there's actually double trouble now. We've got two of us, and we're both coming from lands down under. My guest for the second hour of the Topher's Unpopular View, the radio show here on American Freedom Radio, is American Freedom Radio show host Vinnie Eastwood. Now, Vinnie, welcome to the show, man.
I was thinking of renaming your show Topher Exposure because, you know, it's really, really good how you kind of put things, you know.
Thank you.
Sort of like overexposure, but Topher Exposure.
Sounds like a plan. Now, mate, just you had me on your show yesterday, and now I've got you on my show today. What's going on? Is this just a presenter's love-in? Well, listeners, don't stress. No, it's not. I want Vinny to come onto this show for a very, very specific reason. Vinny is a man who has spent a great deal of time now and really invested his life into internet activism, internet radio. I host 1 2-hour radio show a week, and I tell you what, that feels like an awful lot of work. Well, my guest today hosts 5, is that correct? 5 2-hour radio shows every single week?
That's acting under the assumption that I don't do any extra interviews after or before or get invited on other people's radio shows, which always happens every week.
So this is pretty much, this is your full-time life. I mean, what we're doing right now, this is what you do.
This is my gig, yo.
Man, that's good to hear. Now, the reason why that's of interest to me is because that gives you a real insight, a real interesting perspective. You've interviewed so many different people. You've talked to so many different people from all different angles and all different aspects of kind of the freedom movement, if you will. You've got a unique perspective that I don't have, for example. I've tended to sit here, I'll read what other people write, I'll listen to other people's work and so forth, but I don't have that opportunity to really just sort of get into their heads and chat with them and find out where they're at and what they're thinking. And so today's show is all about where are we going from here. And in the first hour, I was talking about the reasons why I think we're headed for a bit of a crunch time. I think things are coming to a bit of a head where governments are becoming so obvious in the ways in which they're clamping down. And simultaneously, people are becoming aware of what's going on and beginning to stand up and say, actually, no, we're not going to take it. These are two incompatible forces. They can't coexist with each other. And to me, that says sooner or later, there's going to come to a head. There's going to be some kind of a conflict, hopefully not bloodshed. I mean that, although history would tell us that it's very likely to not be very pretty. And out of that conflict, we're going to go one way or the other. Big government will win on the one hand and will descend into some sort of a tyranny in some way reminiscent of what we've seen in Nazi Germany, in communist Russia, the sorts of places where we've seen what happens when governments take complete control over a country. Or we might see the freedom side win, the individuals who are standing up. And that's what we saw, for example. We haven't seen that throughout history anywhere near as often, but we saw that, for example, during the U.S. War of Independence from the British Empire, where I believe it was only about 3% of the U.S. population actually fought that war, and yet they defeated the most powerful military in the world at the time. So, Vinny, talk to me. Where are we at? I mean, do you even agree with me that we're headed towards some sort of a conflict? Where are your thoughts when it comes to this whole where are we headed question?
The phrase, what happens when an unstoppable force hits an immovable object comes to mind.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's basically what the situation is to my mind, and I have a very positive and happy and go-lucky sort of perspective. But the reality is different to how I sort of portray things and thing. You know, like basically, if you want to be afraid and you want to be freaked out with all the news and all of these things pelting at you every day, don't listen to my show. You won't get any of that.
you're much too happy. You're much too upbeat for all that sort of thing. Listen to my show. I'll go into the nitty gritty details and dirty underhanded dealings that are going on.
Yeah. So my show's pretty much unique for the world at this moment, whereby we do look at all that stuff, but we're laughing our asses off at it
all the way through
because you really don't have much of a choice, and I don't know about you, but I really like to see variants. I really like to experience different things and what have you. And you cannot experience laughing at people being exterminated on a very odd occasion. So naturally, my show is the lighter side of genocide. Now, in terms of where we're going, the information is very clear. And the plans have already been released. The public at large is largely unaware of what these plans are, even though they've been admitted, even though they've been broadcast on mainstream media, even though they get reiterated on alternative media on a daily basis. Here's the plan. Mm. No freedom of speech. Mm-hmm. No habeas corpus. So if you're arrested, no evidence will have to be produced or anything like that. There will be one law for the governed and one law for the governors. And the governors will be more or less the incredibly wealthy power elite bankers and things of such nature that they have managed to purchase nearly every single vestige of things that protects people's freedoms, bar none. The only thing that remains is eclectic individuals from all over the world in various different forms of public and private office. Now, you and I, Topher, we don't work in the public service, so we don't have that perspective of, I'm working for a bunch of scumbags. What can I do to stop them? There are some people like local sheriffs and things like that in the United States who will not bow to federal pressure.
Boy, is that good news, can I say. If anyone who knows one of those sheriffs or if any of those sheriffs are listening, good on you. Stick to your guns, because I tell you what, we are going to need people like you in the near future.
Mm-hmm. Now, despite the fact that it has been very clear to many people of our persuasion for some time that people in government positions or positions of authority are just not your friends, and they seem to be and they just seem to be corrupt or mm-hmm. whatever. The fact remains that there are good people within bad systems. Just because the system is bad doesn't mean that it has systemically infected and corrupted and destroyed the morality of everybody within that framework. So those are the very rare individuals who are quite powerful, strong, willing people who are willing to stand up and say, no, even though they may lose their funding, they may lose their form of employment. They may even lose their lives if they blow the whistle. Those kind of people are the ones that really need to be supported by the alternative media. Sorry, the new media, because alternative implies that there's, you know, a thing like mainstream media, which is, you know, the predominant, and these are the people that are credible and what have you, whereas they're not. I like to call us the new media, because therefore anybody else who is not part of the new media is by proxy old and crusty. And they very much are.
Yeah, look, I don't mind that comparison at all. Look, you went through a bit of a list of what the plan is. There'll be no free speech. There'll be no habeas corpus. We'll be guilty until proven innocent, essentially, and until we can prove ourselves innocent. That there'll be one rule for them and another one for us. And I was going through, as you said, that I was going through in my head and just going, already there. Yep, already, or that one's already done. Mm-hmm. All three of them. Now, just on the free speech issue, here in Australia, I made a short documentary about an inquiry called the Finkelstein Inquiry, which was a media beat-up and a political opportunity for them to try and restrict free speech. The recommendations were made in the Finkelstein Inquiry that would have been devastating to freedom of speech. Because of political back pressure and blowback from that, they pretty much abandoned those plans. But then immediately, they move on to some other way of restricting speech. They don't kind of give up. They don't give up the overall objective. They just go, that particular way of achieving this isn't going to work, so we're going to move on to another one. Free speech here in Australia is I wouldn't say non-existent, but there are certainly no-go zones. For example, we have at the moment a guy touring Australia called Geert Wilders, who you may or may not have heard of as the he's been involved in Dutch politics for some time and has become quite well known for being a very outspoken opponent of essentially Islam as a worldview. He's very concerned about the violence that Islam has brought to his country. He's very concerned about the statements from you know, various Islamic imams and within the Quran itself about how Islam is in their view, must become a dominant ideology, that those who won't bow must either be made chattel slaves or killed outright. Various things like that. And he wanted to come on a speaking tour last year here in Australia. And he applied for a visa, as people have to do, and our immigration department simply, they didn't deny him his visa because that would have been inappropriate, but they simply took so long to make up their minds that the tour had to be cancelled. Now, he then reapplied again, and he's in Australia right now, so he managed to get his visa the second time around, but we've seen protests and all sorts of things and people calling for him to be shut down and all that sort of stuff, and we've reached a point now where freedom of speech as a across the board applies to everyone, everyone's free to speak their mind and the rest of us are free to think that they're idiots, no longer exists. We, on a daily basis, we're seeing here in Australia calls for people to be made to shut up.
Yep, and we see that daily in New Zealand. We see that daily in America. If you're pro-gun in America, you're crazy. If you're what are they called? If you're pro-life in terms of you're crazy. If you're pro-Christianity, you're crazy. And in fact, now James Wright, who's the highest level Freemasonic whistleblower in modern history, has come out and launched a petition at whitehouse.gov to outlaw secret societies, including Freemasonry, within the United States because of the conflict of interest that they propose when people are in elected positions. Because if you've taken secret oaths, it doesn't matter if you have a public oath that is in conflict with it. And indeed, people are saying that this is a breach of the First Amendment, the freedom of speech and what have you. And he's saying that them saying that it's a breach of his First Amendment and telling him that is actually a breach of his Fourth Amendment.
Things can get very confusing sometimes.
Right, they're very confusing. Now, here's the point, is that you can say and whatever you want. You can propose whatever you want, right? Like, you can propose to shut down free speech if you want. I believe you can say that. You can say, I don't want people to have the right to free speech. You can say that I don't want people to have the freedom of association. Once that is actually implemented, though, then it's a violation and it should be discussed and debated beforehand and then shut down. Whereas if something is coming out and you believe that it violates an amendment or whatever, should it be banned and illegal to propose things of such a nature? Because that is actually tyranny to protect freedom, which is a contradiction in terms, isn't it?
It is. And you've raised a fascinating can of worms, and one of the areas that I have thought about, and I still haven't come up with an answer that I'm personally satisfied with. And it's to put it in a nutshell, it's this question of, can we tolerate intolerance? Let's go back to the Islam example. When you look at countries where Islam is the dominant religion, where Sharia law has been implemented, they have absolutely no tolerance for anything outside of Sharia law. There is no allowance, there is no room left for a dissenting point of view. So I think it's fair to say...
I would say that that's not true, though. Iran actually has a thriving Jewish population. Did you know that?
No.
Yeah, who all enjoy their freedoms and practicing at the synagogues and things of that nature. You know, it's very untrue. And what I find very interesting about the Muslim question, as people say, is that I've got a couple of listeners who are Muslim, and they've explained to me some of these things in the Quran. And Jesus Christ is actually seen as one of the major prophets of God to the Muslims. And
no, I'm aware of that. Yeah.
And what I find very interesting is that there is a element within Christianity who believes that Muslims are the enemy, whereas what's the actual antithesis to Christianity? It's not Islam, it's actually Satanism. And yet you don't have a hell of a lot of Christians going out there saying Satanists are bad, they're evil or whatever. They're actually going out there saying Muslims are bad and evil. Has a Muslim country ever attacked a Western nation in living memory? No, it's actually been the Western nations attacking the Muslim nations. So who's the real bad guy here?
It is interesting. You've raised what I would consider to be a false dichotomy in the sense of looking for the antithesis of Christianity. Religions, by their nature, tend to be exclusive of anyone who isn't within. And so, therefore, it's not really a question. It's not a question of who's the antithesis. It's a question of who's the greatest threat. And I think from a Christian point of view, a lot of people see the rise and the expansion of Islam as the greatest threat to Christianity. Now, for the record and for the listener's sake, so that you know where I'm personally coming from, I classify myself as a Christian. I have no problem with being very, very public about that. I am absolutely committed, and I firmly believe that, in fact, the Bible preaches that we are each responsible for deciding what we want to believe, and that no force or coercion can be used to try and change what someone believes. And in fact, beyond that, if I were to force someone to come along to church and say their prayers and do the whole Christianity thing, that I wouldn't have actually done any good for them at all, because it hasn't changed their heart. It hasn't actually changed what they believe. It's just changed their actions. So my view of Christianity and my view of religion is one where I am a Christian. I believe that the Christian worldview is the right one. But I believe that I have no right to force it onto other people. It has to be by free will. So therefore, preaching and in, you know, talking to others and discussing religion is fantastic. I'm all for it. The introduction of force into the issue of religion, I am wholeheartedly against. And this is where I personally have a concern about the role that Islam plays in, for example, worldwide terrorist attacks and so forth. Now, there's arguments about who started what and whether, you know, for example, the Palestinians are pushing back against the Israeli occupation, as it's often called, or the Israelis will then turn around and say, well, we declare ceasefires, we go into negotiation, and then they start firing rockets at us again, and so forth. And this all goes backwards and forwards. But for me, you remember yesterday when we were on your show, Vinny, we were talking about the way that I get to the bottom of the issue of who's a bad guy in any given conflict is asking myself the simple question, who needs to stop firing in order for the firing to stop? In other words, if we have a conflict between two sides, usually what will happen, if we force one side to stop firing, the firing stops because the other side wasn't the aggressor.
In this case, like in terms of the religious context that we're talking about, you know, you take satanic organizations such as Skull and Bone Society and Bohemian Grove and these kind of people, and you understand that these are actually the leaders of America now. They are the real threat. You know, no. So and they are the ones who need to stop firing before the firing will stop.
When you look at a political level, they have intentions of taking over the world, nothing less than complete world domination. And so certainly, that's what both of our shows are mostly about, isn't it? Is about their plans and what it is that they have planned to do to the rest of us. We'll be back with Vinny Eastwood. I'm going to keep grilling him for his ideas and his thoughts and what he has to say about the freedom movement right after this break. Freedom Radio. This is Topher's Unpopular View, the radio show. And I have Vinny Eastwood, famous for his own American Freedom Radio show, the Vinny Eastwood Show, cryptically named. I know, it's unexpected when a guy's called Vinny Eastwood. You wouldn't think he would call his show the Vinny Eastwood Show. But there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Sometimes truth is stranger than fiction. Vinny, welcome to the show, mate.
Yeah, it's the ego trip show on the Vinny Eastwood show, you know.
Well, see, I would never do that. I would never name my show after me and, for example, call it Topher's Unpopular View or something like that. I'm too good for that sort of thing. I don't have that kind of ego.
Yeah, I know. I mean, only a douchebag would do that.
Now, mate, sorry to get serious, but I really want to try and get inside your head and please help me to understand. If you can step outside your bubble for a second, the bubble that you live in, as someone who's really involved in the freedom movement, as someone who's you're interviewing people every single day of the week, you've got your finger on the pulse of what's going on. Step outside that for a second, and what's the headspace of the average New Zealander that you come across? Where are they at? Are these sorts of issues, government issues and government intrusion? Are they even on their radar?
Three syllables: apathy. Don't get fracked. At all. I used to go out and film a lot of dance parties back before I was able to make enough income doing this in order to do it fully full-time. And, you know, you try to strike up conversations with this and 90% of people, they just kind of glazed eyes walk away a lot of the time, actually. You start talking, and within about maybe 60 seconds or so of you pontificating about scumbaggery and how messed up things are, they're getting the frack out of there. You know, they can't handle it, they don't want to handle it, and they don't want to hear it. Okay, it's just that simple. People are not interested in hearing truth, basically. If you go to a political party meeting, the party will never, ever criticize itself or admit any of its own shortcomings. People are afraid of admitting that they're wrong. Me, personally, I'm free to say whatever I want and whatever I feel, because if somebody comes and contradicts me, I'm actually happy for that opportunity, because I fully admit that I'm wrong about lots of things, have been many times, and I'm not willing to stand back and defend an indefendable position. Yeah. That is the direct antithesis to the current New Zealand mentality in the public.
Yeah, yeah. See, it's funny you say that political parties won't admit they're wrong. I got invited to speak at a very small party branch meeting for a political party here in Victoria. And it's a political party that a lot of people assume that I'm aligned with. A lot of people assume, oh, you must be a part of that party. And so I got invited to speak at their branch meeting, and I was up front with the guy who gave me the invitation. I said, listen, you do realize that I, by my very nature, am going to get stuck into you guys. I'm going to be talking about the things that you guys need to improve on, not giving you a nice little back-scratching session and telling you what a great job you're doing. And he said, yep, that's fine. You've got a free hand. Say whatever it is that you need to say. So I went in there, and I took – well, I might as well say it. It's the Liberal Party here in Australia. It was one of their small branch meetings, and they are cryptically our more conservative party over here. And they were originally formed as a coalition of other small parties specifically to stop the spread of socialism. When you actually go back to the original founding of the Liberal Party here in Australia, it was a specific response to the perceived threat of socialism coming into the country. And so I pulled out some of the founding documents, the quotes from some of the founding leaders of the Liberal Party. And I said, you know, and they're up on the Liberal Party website still. I mean, these aren't obscure documents. This is stuff that they live by, supposedly, every single day. And I stood up in front of the group and I read out those quotes. And I said, right, let's give you guys a report card. How well are you doing stopping the spread of socialism in this country? And I started to list off policies which had been introduced by John Howard, who was the most recent Liberal Party Prime Minister. Socialist policies, redistributive policies, taxing one group, subsidizing another group, doing all the very things that are the cornerstones of socialism. And I laid into him for about 20, 25 minutes and basically said, right, you guys either need to take this stuff off your website, or you need to reform the party and actually make it match your own rhetoric and your own idea of what it is. Well, I tell you what, they were actually thrilled. The 20-odd people in that room were actually really, really thrilled, and they were so encouraged to be being criticized by being told they're not being extreme enough, because they're so used to being criticized. People say, oh, no, moderation, you've got to meet in the middle, you've got to blah, 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 you know, handshake across the aisle. No, I was coming and saying, guys, get radical, because you're failing to achieve the objective that you set out to achieve. Well, my hand was pumped enthusiastically by the person who claimed to be on the board of the next sort of level up in the political party, and he said that I'd shortly be getting an invitation to come in and give exactly the same message at the sort of the next level up. There'd be a few hundred people there, and that invitation never came. Surprise, surprise. So I think you're right. I think political parties, as a general rule, even though the grassroots at an individual level, they might be very, very open to it. I think at an organizational level, they're there to protect themselves and to protect their best interests, what's best.
They believe that credibility is about never being wrong, whereas I believe credibility is about admitting when you are.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah, absolutely.
And political parties simply do not abide by that principle, because they think that if people... I don't know what it is. Maybe it's media pressure or the indoctrination that comes through public schooling, so that people get ridiculed if they get answers wrong in class or something of that nature. They see being wrong as a bad thing, whereby being wrong is actually the best thing that could ever happen to you. There's an old quote by Mark Twain. He says, "When an honest man is confronted with the truth and that he's wrong, he will either cease to be wrong or cease to be honest."
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And that is what we have now, is an enormous industry of dishonesty that has positioned itself to be the rulers of everybody. So naturally, you have a public that favors dishonesty over clarity, that favors scumbaggery over honor.
Mm.
That is the real problem, and this is a frog in the boiling pot scenario. How hot does the temperature in that water have to get? How high does the level of scumbaggery have to come up to your neck and to your throat? Does it have to go over your mouth so you can only breathe through your nose, or does it have to go through your nose and you have to learn how to breathe through your ears before you will suddenly realize, oh, my God, there is something really, really bad going on here and we need to change things? There is a lot of discord among activists, and I've seen this for these last 7 or 8 years that I've been out on the street exposing scumbaggery, and it occurs to me that if you are telling the truth, you will offend both sides of every major argument.
Yes.
Okay, and that's the sad reality of it. Both sides of every major argument are always wrong. And the reason I know that is because if one side of each of those arguments was correct, the argument would be over pretty freaking quickly, wouldn't it? But it doesn't. It keeps going on and on and on because both sides are wrong. And so when somebody comes along and telling the truth, you make both the sides wrong. And so they both hate you, and they both tell you to shut up, and they both tell you to get out of the meeting. I've been in public meetings here in New Zealand where I have not said a word and simply stood there with a tripod as a cameraman, simply filming a public meeting and being thrown out by security guards.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. The last thing I remember, again, going back to the discussion we were having on your show yesterday, Vince, I was telling you about the time when I had to go and rescue my mum from being arrested and thrown out of the family home by police officers who were trespassing, and actually ended up having to admit that they had no right to be there and that they'd been illegally on our property and illegally intimidating my mum. But it was interesting. It wasn't so much my presence that changed their attitude and got them to do exactly as they were told. It was the fact that I walked onto that property with my phone recording, held out in front of me, obvious for all to see, and they knew from that moment everything they did was, and you know, was going to be scrutinized, potentially in a court of law if they screwed up badly enough. People do not like the possibility of being held accountable. And I've heard of that before where local council meetings and so forth will throw people out simply for wanting to have their own record of what went on inside that room. Courtrooms that get sealed all the time for no good reason. They're not trying to protect a particular witness's identity, or there's no kind of justifiable reason. It's actually to protect the judge. That's actually why a lot of courtrooms get sealed today.
I've had this experience myself whereby I had to apply 10 days before the court date in order to have permission to film, and the judge reserves the right to be able to revoke that permission at any moment and also request the footage and delete it if he wants. So, and even in family courts where large quantities of pedophilia, even among the judiciary within those organizations and among the child, youth and family services in New Zealand, where they have been recorded selling children, they have been recorded dealing meth with children that they've stolen in the house and things of this nature, hiring them out to local pedophiles who are nurses, doctors, lawyers, police, etc., within the local community. These are the reasons why it is illegal. It is absolutely illegal under New Zealand law to record within the family courts. And more or less, you cannot record inside regular courtrooms anyway, to a large extent. Of course, it happens. It happens. But every now and again, there are no records. And my friend and activist, Penelope Bright, at waterpressure.wordpress.com, she has said, how can a court of record be a court of record if there is no record of what the court judges?
Exactly. Yeah, the whole system, that kind of phenomenon.
Now, the whole system is predicated on absolute hypocrisy. Basically, we live an upside-down world, much like Alice in Wonderland. And if you have a look at the stated objective of a political party, organization, anything that is institutionalized, anything that has a party line or things of that nature, assume that it is the direct opposite of its stated intention. If the police and their job description is to prevent crime and to punish the guilty, then obviously their job is to create crime and let the guilty go free. If the political party is to protect people's freedom and to make the country run more efficiently, then obviously their job is to impose tyranny and to destroy any form of efficiency within the country. If the health system's job is to prevent disease and to allow people to be healthy, then obviously the stated objective is the opposite. It's to cause disease and to ensure people remain sick for as long as humanly possible until their bank accounts are dry and so are their bodies of health.
So you're talking there at an institutional level. I mean, I would completely disagree with that statement at an individual level. I think there's an awful lot of police officers, for example, who think or who are trying to reduce crime, an awful lot of doctors who are working very, very hard to bring health. At an institutional level, I think you're correct about the actual outcomes, but I wouldn't necessarily lay
Of course, I actually agree with you there as well. The outcomes are the direct opposite of what the stated objectives is, even if the individuals are trying to keep to the stated objective, okay? There have been many, many people throughout history who have done precisely what they're told, believing it is the right thing and the good thing to do, who have achieved the direct opposite. Just following orders, and this is the danger I feel of institutionalization and the freedom that is actually installed when you allow individuals to take responsibility for their own health, their own justice, and things of that nature. I don't like mob rule, which is what the word democracy actually means. You know, look it up in a dictionary. And I don't like the possibility of somebody else being to force me to do anything if I have done nothing wrong. And have not damaged somebody's property or caused loss of some kind. And yet it seems self-evident that whenever I look around at how the authorities treat people, they're always bossing people around, they're always taxing them without their consent, they're always censoring their free speech without justification, and they're always breaking the very laws that they make without consequence.
Tick, tick, tick. I agree with every one of those points. Very quickly, there's something that occurred to me a while ago about the delusion, I guess, that comes on for people who work in, for example, the police force, who, good, sincere, hardworking people who are busting their gut to try and make the world a better place. And I compare it to, for example, members of the British Royal Navy just prior to the US Revolution, where the Royal Navy was something to aspire to. You could be incredibly proud of the fact that you were a sailor in the Royal Navy. You were fighting for king and country and protecting the empire. And yet, in reality, they'd become nothing more than scumbag tax collectors, boarding ships in a harbor in Boston and counting up and writing out a bill to the ship's owner. The reality of the job that they were doing was completely disconnected from the perception that they had of themselves. And tragically, I think that's exactly what police these days are in. The reality of what they're doing is very different to what they thought they were signing up for when they joined.
Imagine you were getting a job at McDonald's or a job as a salesperson for Coca-Cola. What do you think they would tell you? Would they tell you our product is the least healthy product in the world and we're responsible for huge quantities of obesity, addiction, diabetes? Or do they tell you we're about fun, we're about families, we're about making people have choices? Do you see how the dynamic works? You can have an organization for which the point of the organization and the person who is in the CEO office knows what's going on, and the people who implement all the policies have absolutely no clue whatsoever.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, is a brilliant summary of how our government works today. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Topher's Unpopular View radio show. I'm with Vinnie Eastwood, and we'll be back after this break to wrap up the show. Welcome back to American Freedom. Freedom Radio. We're into the very, very end of the show, and my guest for this second hour, and I've loved having you as my guest, Vinny. It's Vinny Eastwood from The Vinny Eastwood Show, also hosted here on American Freedom Radio. And if you haven't checked out his show, you've been missing out, and you need to do that as of tomorrow. Vinny, thanks for joining me.
What's funny is you said, Vinny, and what's interesting is yesterday I was around at a mate's place, and one of the little girls that he looks after said, "Oh, I remember you. What's your name?" And I go, "It starts with a V," and he goes, "And it ends with an innie," and he goes, "Oh, Vinny, yeah, that's right."
That could have gone wrong. Now, we were actually talking in the break about something that I'd love for you to share with everyone who's listening. You were talking about the unintended consequences and what politicians do about unintended consequences. So talk us through that.
All right. So anybody in the conspiracy movement knows that any secret or conspiracy is like layers of an onion. You know, you peel back one layer after the other. And anybody knows that whenever a policy is implemented with a stated objective, often, not all the time, but often, that stated objective and the effect have a massive disconnect. So let's say you implement socialism policies in order to make everybody equal, and it actually winds up just simply funneling money into massive bureaucracies and into the pockets of the bankers as a result. Okay, so it makes everything much less equal. Now, the other side of this is those are the unintended consequences, because if there's an unintended consequence that also has a lot of other flow-on effects, just like an onion, that is an unintended consequence, hence unintended consequences. However, a logical person will say, we implemented this policy to achieve objective A, and instead of achieving objective A, it did the direct opposite. Instead of saying, you know what, that was actually a bad policy, my bad, let's revoke that and try something different, they instead implement other policies that are on the exact same mentality, the exact same vein, that are even more expensive and even more ineffective, in the hopes that their delusions will somehow come
through. There are 10 minutes remaining in this conference.
You know, it is interesting that you say that. What springs to my mind immediately when you brought that up during the break was, of course, Ben Bernanke and the U.S. Federal Reserve's quantitative easing program. You know, we're now into quantitative easing. I can't even say the words. QE3 is what we're on now. And that's a perpetual easing program where I think it's $40 billion a month or something, and it has no sunset clause on it. It'll be for as long as necessary. Now, the name tells you everything you need to know about it. It's QE3. That means they've already tried QE2. And before that, they tried QE1, and they didn't work. But exactly what you're saying, they didn't go, oh, well, hang on, this technique is the wrong technique. They just said, oh, we just got to go again. Go bigger. Let's spend more money. It's yeah. Madness.
See, and that's an unintended consequence, because they have a consequence and they add another layer on the onion in order to see if the consequence changes, but it never does. Therefore, you must be suspicious that whatever the consequence is to what they're doing is actually their real intention, that they're simply not telling you about until too fracking late.
Yeah, that goes right back to what I was saying in the first hour of the show, and just talking about all the things, all the reasons why I believe we're headed towards a crunch point. And one of the ones that I wasn't able to expand on is just this issue of the financial crunch that's coming, the economic crunch that's coming. Now, most people see an economic crunch as a bad thing. People out of work, people hungry, all the rest of it. But people who want to, in Barack Obama's words, radically transform, fundamentally transform, excuse me, his word was fundamentally transform a nation. Well, never let a good crisis go to waste. Creating a crisis could actually be a vehicle for him. So it is interesting that you say that, because everything that he's done, all of his economic policy so far, has pushed us closer to an economic crisis. Now, I've assumed that he's simply incompetent and inept, that the advisors around him simply have no idea what they're doing. But maybe the guys are smarter than I've given credit for.
You know what I think is going to happen? That the economic collapse will happen just after the next US election, when a new person comes in, and then when it happens, they'll blame it on the previous administration. just like the Obama administration blamed all the problems on the Bush administration, and the Bush administration blamed all the problems on the Clinton administration,
yeah.
and the Clinton administration blamed everything on the Bush administration, and the Bush administration so blamed forth, everything yeah. on the... It's an endless cycle of we never take frickin' responsibility for anything!
Yeah. Well, do you think that's the end game, though? I mean, I am concerned about this character, Obama. He does appear to me to be an extreme egomaniac. And it has been suggested that
How can you become the president of a country without being an extreme egomaniac, especially one that has now billion-dollar election campaigns?
Yeah. Well, that's a valid point, but I would say that there are people who, most of whom haven't been successful, but there are people who have run for president without that size of ego.
And without success, might we know.
And generally, yes, you're right, and that's what was going on in the back of my brain. I was kind of thinking, maybe you've got a point, I don't know. But for me, people speculate that Obama's endgame might be that he wants to become, you know, the king, essentially, the long-term ruler of the United States of America, or that he wants to become the king and ruler of the United Nations as some one-world government or what have you. And, of course, as far as I'm concerned, all of that is genuinely pure speculation. But it has that ring of oh dear, maybe, about it. And if he could create a big enough crisis at the opportune moment and then step in as the savior, I wonder whether he might do that halfway through this term or towards the end of this term in order to prop himself up with all the powers that he has under the NDAA and so forth and be able to crush anyone who actually would oppose such a takeover. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I think that the New World Order takes a long-term approach to policy, particularly social engineering policy, whereby it is not a bright idea to have all of your tyranny and all of your brainwashing and all of your scumbaggery nuts and eggs in one basket, as it were. So what you'll do is you'll get a number of baskets. This is what I call a basket case for which you will spread out your scumbaggery agenda and take away everything from everybody as each and every single one of these baskets gradually drops and all the eggs get smashed on the ground. So I don't think the United States is at a point yet where it can very easily transition into complete and total tyranny. Lindsay Williams has told me that the elite do not want a revolution. They do not want an armed uprising. And I see the fact that the United States still has guns in the hands of the citizenry as an indication that they will not go into a hot tyranny until those guns are taken. Now, it'll take a number of years, maybe a decade or so, before enough brainwashing, enough demonization, and enough coercion is applied whereby people will give up their arms willingly. And I have no doubt that eventually they may attempt a takeover, as it will, but it will not be with a roar, it'll be with a whimper. People will not give up in such a way that will it won't be obvious to people what's happening.
It'll be designed to not spark a revolution specifically. I mean, look at what happened here in Australia when John Howard brought in his gun ban, which at the time, by the way, for the record, I actually supported at the time. Such was my ignorance, and such has been the radical shift in my worldview over the last decade of my life. But at the time, I supported the idea of taking guns away from people who didn't need them and getting them off the streets and all that sort of thing. And people willingly walked into police stations and handed them over for, you know, a fraction of their actual market value. In a gun amnesty, gun buyback program. And we've seen attempts to do similar things. You know, I disagree with you a little bit. I think the American psyche is strong enough, and I think that there are enough Americans out there who will stand their ground no matter what, that I don't think they'll ever get to the point where they can successfully strip the country of guns. There will be a percentage who will willingly do what we in Australia very foolishly did, but I think there will always be a very large percentage who never will. And I think the moment when they try and do that, no matter how subtle it may be, I think that'll be the moment when they spark the very revolution that they're trying to avoid. I am personally hopeful that the American people will not be duped and will not give any ground on this issue.
Well, you know, I have to disagree with you there. I believe that people over long enough periods of times of brainwashing and forced indoctrination of future generations will be able to accept any condition, any condition. That is why the United Nations now has a massive foothold in United States schools. That is why in their schools now they do not pledge allegiance to the flag and the Constitution of the United States. Now they now actually pledge allegiance to be global citizens. They are brainwashing. Yeah, see, they are brainwashing the kids. And the lesson of history is that no free society is any more than two generations away from tyranny. And the United States has been living under freedom for quite a number of generations so far, but it's getting more tyrannical by the day, and it only takes the old guard, those who are experienced, those who are historically clued up to know what gun bans really, really mean. And in this context, I know we're coming to the end of the show here. In this context, I want to just explain to the American people, and I believe that this should be reiterated on every street corner, every television show, and every radio show, and every billboard, and every frickin' cigarette packet, and every chocolate bar wrapper. If you give up your guns, and this is the lesson of history, if you give up your guns, you eventually get enslaved or exterminated. Period. There is no other lesson in history that is more clear than that. And if you want it to be explained fully, go and watch the documentary Innocence Betrayed, which is on YouTube, which documents many cases throughout history where guns have been banned and the people have been enslaved or exterminated. Topa, thank you very much for letting me come on your show, man. It's been a pleasure and honor as always.
Well, there you go, listeners. That's Vinny Eastwood. If you don't know, if you're not checking out his show on a regular basis, I encourage you to do so. It's right here on American Freedom Radio. Look up the times on the American Freedom Radio website. Thank you very much for joining me, and I'll be right back with another episode of Topher's Unpopular View, the radio show, next week.